Thanks, everyone, for spending time with us tonight in this UFO roundtable discussion. We're talking with Alejandro Rojas and Antonio Huneas of Open Minds about documents and foreign governments, and as well as current UFO cases. We'll be opening up the phone lines a little bit later, so be thinking of your questions about maybe some current UFO cases that you're interested in. We'll be right back after this on Coast to Coast AM. Alejandro, before we entirely leave behind the British MOD files, of course, the Rendlesham-Bentwaters case is sort of the granddaddy of UFO incidents over there. We saw a recent report in Britain in which it was claimed this the second in command, I guess, at the base at the time. American commander comes out and says, nah, it wasn't a UFO after all. This guy hadn't been heard from before, I guess. What do you make of that?
He was actually the base commander at the time. So he was first in command. And then Charles Hall, who was second in command, was one of the witnesses of the UFO and who took the people out there to witness the UFO. What's weird about his testimony is that he says, you know, we were hanging out at and we were listening to the radar contact of Paul out in the forest with the men and hearing them having their sighting. So we went out on the patios of our homes, him and as a couple other officers with their wives to look, and they didn't see anything. Well, that's kind of difficult. These guys were out in the forest. He goes on, though, to say that he's disappointed in Holt making such claims about things he's not sure of. And he even says possibly Holt and everybody else involved is hoaxing this. So those are some pretty strong claims. On the other hand, you have all of the testimony in the different situations that happened where, you know, on two evenings at least, probably more, where there were UFO sightings with several witnesses. So he doesn't really address everything going on here. When you hear Holt, the other thing he doesn't address is that he was the one with Holt who wrote the memo. He ordered Holt to write the memo on his sighting, and essentially their take was, well, we shouldn't deal with this UFO issue because it happened in the forest outside of the base, so it's the UK's problem. So they wrote a memo on the sightings and then sent that to the MOD, which later came out and became very popular. And Holt was very hesitant to talk about this case at all. So it really took a lot of prying and took a lot of time. It wasn't until, and I think Antonio was there actually, when Unsolved Mysteries covered the case on television, and he said he even asked some intelligence officers when they were talking to him about a different case. He said, is it okay for me to talk about this UFO stuff? And they said, what are you talking about? And he said, well, there's a big sighting. I wrote a report and everything. They're like, sure, we don't care. And then he's been out talking about it ever since.
Hey, just like he throws his own men under the bus here, and it's kind of late in the game to be coming forward,
right,
and disavowing the whole thing.
Yeah, it's very strange. Someone pointed out, actually I was talking with DLT researcher Nancy Talbot this the other day, and she pointed out the timing was interesting, that this news came out about a month ago, which is not too far after they just filmed this new History Channel special where they went over the Rendlesham case. So it was interesting that this guy should come out and talk right before this special comes out.
Talk to me about media coverage. We'll go into some of the individual instances, but you know, the mainstream media, of course, in America doesn't cover this stuff very often. But online and international press, there's been a whole flurry of UFO-related stories and accounts that have come up recently. For example, you mentioned about the History Channel special. I know it's not the same as, Dan Rather or some anchorman delivering a report about a UFO incident, but I guess it does add to the general information base of the public. Antonio, your thoughts on that?
You mean the latest documentary that was based on the Leslie Keene?
Yeah,
I mean, obviously for us, we're familiar with all of those cases, you know, because they're basically the classic. So some of them are fairly recent, like the O'Hare Airport in Chicago, but a lot of them are not so recent, you know, the Japan Airlines case and, of course, Rendlesham Forest and the Phoenix Lights and so on. But first of all, that is based on her book anyway, so those are the cases that are treated in her book. And also, I guess it's meant to really educate people because, like you say, this is very different type of documentary from the ones that occasionally are done by the networks or even by some of the cable channels, you know, like Discovery and so on, where they always have the skeptics, right? And they give them equal time, sometimes even more than equal time, but not in this case. In this case, it's just a straight dope, you know? I mean, this is what happened. These were the pilots involved. This was the fellow from the FAA who investigated the Japan Airlines case over Alaska in November of 1986, and so on. So it certainly is important. It's important for us. I guess I'm a little jaded, you know, because I've heard some of these cases so many times. But obviously they're aiming at a much wider audience.
We saw a little flap come up, American economist, who comes up with this idea, hey, maybe what the American economy needs is an alien invasion.
I was amazed by that. Paul Krugman, right? He's not only right. an economist, he's a Nobel Prize. He's a Nobel right. Prize economist and a columnist for the New York Times. Of course, he was saying it in a sort of a facetious way.
Right.
But is an old concept. Actually, there is a curious line in the famous Robertson panel, you know, that was convened by the CIA back in 1953. And Dr. Robertson was a prominent astrophysicist from California, who had all the necessary clearances and all that, because at the time that was secret. And there's one line there, and this is at the height of the Cold War, right? And most of the deliberations were actually how the reports of UFOs could affect the Cold War reporting and all that. That's why they actually even used the word debunking. They came out with a policy that UFOs should be debunked because they could pose a threat. Not UFOs, but UFO reports could clog the defense channels. But to go back to your question, there is a line there by Dr. Robertson where he says that nothing would unite more the Earth like if we were facing an alien invasion. And, of course, this was the same thinking that Ronald Reagan kept repeating over and over again. We have at least three major speeches by Ronald Reagan, including one at the United Nations General Assembly. He always put it in a hypothetical way, but he always said the same. If the Earth was threatened by invaders from outer space, it would unite us and the Soviets. Those were the days of the communists, right? So everybody would become united, which I guess it's true. I mean, if it did happen, it would unite us because obviously, you know, we're all human. We have our differences in politics and religion and race and culture. But compared to an alien race, of course, it would be we're all much more similar. Whether this is going to happen or not, I don't know. I think it probably won't happen. I mean, if aliens wanted to invade us, they should have invaded us already 40, 50 years ago when our defenses were rather poor.
Alejandro, tell me what's going on in China. We keep getting reports about incidents at Chinese airports, and they sound really good for a day or two, and then they quickly get debunked. That was just a bunch of clouds. What do you know about the recent incidents in China?
I'm glad you brought this up because I think this is one of the really interesting cases that's going on right now. Right. Last July, we had some cases with a couple of airports that were closed due to UFO sightings. And really, nobody determined what those were. There were photographs, and I wrote a long thing on this on our website about how the media really mangled this. YouTube immediately, different YouTubers put different alleged UFO pictures up and said these were from China. None of them were from China. There was one photo from China that was a plane, but this was the photo that was taken a couple hours after the airport was closed down. So it didn't have anything to do with the actual airport being closed down. As for what closed the airport down, nobody's sure yet. Now this happens again just this month, about on the 13th, on a Saturday, an airport in Chongqing, China, was closed down for nearly an hour because of a UFO that people had seen. Nobody knows what it is. Some people have said maybe it was a lantern or a large balloon, but still, I mean, it closed down an airport for nearly an hour, so that's a big deal. I think even cooler then, a few days later, just the other day, actually, there were sightings of a large circular kind of luminescent bubble that grew and got really huge. This was seen in Shanghai and in Beijing, also reported by pilots who were on the air, people on the ground. The speculation is that these were rockets or possibly fuel that was left in the upper atmosphere by a rocket launch, and this fuel just kind of expanded, and then when the sun hit it, it luminesced. But still, this isn't the kind of thing that, you know, we typically see anywhere. I mean, I don't know of anybody that's gotten amazing pictures like this. And these stories kind of come out. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of English-Chinese news on the web that is monitored or gets to the English news that much. So we didn't hear especially a lot about this one the other day. But if you go to the website, the Shanghaiist, or even better, go to openminds.tv and click on the news tab, and you'll see all the stories, because we cover this stuff on a daily basis. We follow all of this. So China has a lot going on, a lot of interesting things. And so far, all of these, even though there's speculation, well, it could have been this, it could have been that, no official story on an answer to any of these cases.
Well, it's almost like you have to assume the Chinese are dumb or really panicky to shut down their airports a couple of times because of some cloud formation. I mean, you know, clouds aren't all that unusual.
Right. One of the explanations that seemed to fit that was conventional, that it could possibly be, is the public is not supposed to fly in China, but you have these very rich people who are so rich, they get to do whatever the heck they want, and they have fleets of planes, and they'll fly their planes whenever they want. And because they legally can't, like, land at an airport or communicate with the tower, they'll just fly over an airport and land wherever they want, and which seems crazy. But there have been times where airports have been closed because these planes are flying over an airport, going to land. They're unknown, so people think, you know, are they terrorists or something? But in these cases, the planes land. They find out, oh, it's that goofy billionaire guy, so-and-so, and they have an answer to it. Very strange situation, but these guys have enough power to do that. So some people have speculated maybe that's what it is. Of course, they would eventually find out who this was. Was that to be the case? And in these three cases, at least so far, that we've had, two last year and the one this year, they haven't determined that to be definitely the case.
I don't know which of you can tackle this one, but there was also a story, at least in the international press, not widely reported here, about this Bulgarian scientist who came out with an opinion about crop circles. Antonio, up on that one?
Yes, I can, because I met the guy. And not only I met him, we have his paper being published on the new issue of Open Minds magazine. It was quite a coup. What happened is I was invited back in April to attend the San Marino World UFO Symposium. San Marino is that little republic in central Italy, which have this annual symposium sponsored by the Ministry of Tourism. And it's usually a very high quality affair. And interesting enough, they also have a SETI symposium. Whereas here, the SETI people are very antagonistic towards ufology. In Europe, it doesn't seem to be the same way. And they have them back to back. So this happened back in April. And to my surprise, I see that Professor Lachesar Filipov is one of the speakers. So we had published a cover story. We had a crop circle issue, actually, in our magazine. It was about two or three issues ago. And Alejandro wrote one of the main pieces, and we had a couple of other articles. And since this fellow was so interested about that, I gave him a copy. And after listening to his presentation, and then on the next day, then he approached me and he says, would your magazine be interested in publishing my paper? Normally this guy is actually a top scientist. He's the head of the Bulgarian Academy of Sciences Institute of Space Research. And normally scientists, you know, they only publish in peer review journals and so on. But what he said is he wanted a wider audience for his thinking. So I said, sure. I mean, I can't guarantee it. I mean, it has to be discussed, you know, by our entire editorial board. But, you know, chances are that we will publish it. And sure enough, It's coming on the next issue, which is not on the newsstands yet, but it will be shortly, within a couple of weeks, it should hit the newsstands. And so I wrote a profile on him and told a little bit of his story, and then we have his paper. And basically what his paper deals with, you know, most people are familiar with SETI, right, which is a search for, you know, in extraterrestrial intelligence. But now there's a new trend, which was started by Zaitsev, by a Russian astrophysicist. And the American SETI people are not too keen on it. But this new trend is called METI. And it's instead of taking a passive, you know, you just listen for possible signals. What METI people are saying is we should take a proactive approach and we should send signals. Although, of course, we are sending signals every single day, right? Even this radio interview will become a signal eventually, you know, everything
sure.
gets beamed into space. But what they're saying is deliberately we should send actual signals, which is actually how SETI started, you know, with by Frank Drake back in 1958 or whenever it was, you know, when the Green Bank Radio Observatory did send a signal to Tau Ceti, I believe it was. So what Professor Filipov is saying is that he's using that terminology, and he's saying that the crop circles are a form of METI, in other words, a messaging of extraterrestrial intelligence being sent by an alien, unknown alien civilization to us, and using the medium of our agricultural fields, mostly in England and in some other places. So it's quite a provocative paper. And a lot of people heard about him on the internet when the story broke a couple of years ago. Now they'll be able to read his full paper.
That's pretty courageous of the guy to come out with a stance like that. I wonder if he's ridiculed in his own country for something like that.
Well, you know, George, you dealt with the Russians.
Yeah.
And I explained that in my profile. And we also have, by the way, a very good piece by Vladimir Rupsov, who is from the Ukraine,
sure.
about the history of ufology in the old Soviet Union, because he participated in some of those committees. It's in the same issue. But as you know, even in the days of communism, somehow when it came to the paranormal, the people in Eastern Europe, they were much more open-minded than their Western counterparts. There's something in their mentality where somehow they don't have the same prejudices. So I'm sure he got some criticism, but he hasn't lost his job. He's still there.
We're going to be taking a break here in about a minute. Alejandro, I want to ask you about WikiLeaks. We kept getting promises that WikiLeaks might release something really big and about UFOs. Where is it?
Yeah, you know, I'm always really positive with what comes out, because a lot of people weren't very excited about what UFO references there were in WikiLeaks. But there were a lot more references than Assange led on. Essentially, he said people who contact us about UFOs are crazy, and there are some crazy things about UFOs in the WikiLeaks. So people blew that up, though. In fact, they left out the sort of his derogative stuff. Said, oh, to come, giant UFO information. But there are some interesting stories. There wasn't any big secret. Of course, the most secret of these WikiLeaks cables is secret. Most of them are just classified. So they're not. They're just barely above what people could actually read. And, in fact, just about this subject, there is a story about a Belarus KGB, the guy in charge of the Belarus KGB. They used to be part of Russia. And he came out and said pretty much the same thing, that someone asked him, why aren't you guys looking into UFOs? And he said, well, we used to look into the paranormal a lot when we were part of Russia, because we had a budget for that and we would find some interesting stuff, but we don't really have the budget to do that anymore. So that was interesting. Another story about a Japanese minister of foreign affairs who was pro-UFO. So there are some interesting files in there, but nothing mind-blowing.
Antonio Hineas, Alejandro Rojas, hang on. We've got a lot more to cover, and we'll be opening up the phone lines. Procol Harum, Whiter Shade of Pale, taking us into the break on Coast to Coast AM. I'm talking with Alejandro Rojas and Antonio Hineas of Open Minds. Still got a lot of ground to cover, but I want to see what's on your mind. These guys have a wealth of information, a depth and breadth on the UFO subject, so what are your questions for them? We'll get into that right after this on Coast to Coast. I want to give you fellows a chance to tell me about your work and your organization here before we go to the phone lines. Open Minds, of course, is a privately funded organization. You got a magazine, you got a website, a radio show. These are tough economic times for any business. I'd just like to know how you're doing. Alejandro, how's it going?
We're doing very well. You know, since we've talked to you last, we've probably tripled or quadrupled our distribution. We're in Walgreens. We're all over the place, Borders and Barnes & Noble for as long as those stores last. But in lots of stores, we hear from people even in, you know, places that we didn't even know we were in Canada and stuff, where they say, hey, I found your magazine in the store. So we're all over the place. It seems like it's doing well. We get a lot of very positive feedback. We have, you know, I keep seeing it. I think, of course, Antonio and I and our other coworkers provide some great content, but we have some incredible graphic designers too who make it look really pretty. And a very controversial subject that is our cover story on this latest issue that's coming out this month is Billy Meier. We actually tackled, or we made one of our coworkers tackle the Billy Meier affair.
Oh boy. That's a big one. Yeah.
It's a big one, and he was very unbiased, but to be completely honest, and I'm going to talk to him, he really uncovered a lot of stuff that made me very skeptical of the whole case.
And Antonio, how would you describe the working relationship? You've been around the UFO scene a long time. There's a lot of infighting and backbiting. Now you're with Open Minds. Do you in general get along with the MUFON and the other organizations or UFO personalities? Is it a mutually cooperative kind of relationship when you cross paths?
Yeah, we do, because basically we have one golden rule. And that is that we do not engage in fighting, personal attacks, opinions. That stuff is, unfortunately, ufology is full of it, and you can find it in the web. You can read Jim Moses' Saucer Smear. You know, there are plenty of places where you can see that, but it doesn't have a place either in our magazine or in our website. Of course, in some cases, you know, we have to deal honestly with certain allegations, and we do so, but without getting into any kind of personality, just the facts. So therefore, we're not engaged in controversies with people, and we get along fine, as far as I can tell. We were just recently, most of our crew went to the MUFON symposium in Orange County in California, and we had a table. We did very well with the sales and promotion of our magazine, and we get along fine with MUFON. Of course, both Alejandro and I were members of the board. I was way back, you know, in charge of the international coordination in the days when there was not even an internet, when you really needed someone who would travel and know languages. All that changed, of course, with the web. And Alejandro, during the last 10 years, you know, he was the head of the public information for MUFON. So, yeah, we're not involved in all the controversy, so-called, you know, reform of MUFON or any of that. We just don't do that. The subject is fascinating and interesting enough on the cases. And unfortunately, it's been mired by years and years of bitter, you know, divisions and infighting and backbiting.
Yeah.
All this
yeah.
kind of stuff, and our magazine is very professionally done, and so is our website. Or Alejandro has a great radio show, and we just deal with the facts, and so it's great. We deal with a lot of people. I deal with a lot of the people in South America, and you know, all the people in Europe, the Bulgarian scientists we're talking, the Russians, and so on. And it's just great for me. It's a sort of a culmination of 30 years, you know, being dealing with this. To have a job like this is just great.
Well, good. That's refreshing. We're going to go to the phone line and see what's on people's minds. East of the Rockies, Don in Ohio. Good morning, Don. Don hung up. West of the Rockies, Patrick in Eastern Washington. How you doing, Patrick?
I'm doing good. Hey, George, you remember Friday Night Show?
Yes.
And you were talking with a CIA executive that actually started the National Enquirer?
We spoke about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm thinking we got two sides to it. We got national security issues on one side. Example would be 1978, Jimmy Carter, helicopters sent to rescue diplomats in Iran. And we got the story that, they didn't use air filters and they had a refueling problem. But just, in a coast-to-coast show at the beginning of the summer, a woman comes on from the college professors of Iran Revolutionary Guard that tells us it's the Russians intercepted our helicopters with their advanced radars. And the Revolutionary Guard attacked our helicopters, and it's a little hard to refuel helicopters when you're being shot at. So that was, in the gimmick, they totally misled us there. And so on the other side of the coin, we got UFO, ufology. And is the water been muddied so much that we're going to need an Independence Day moment or a Day the Earth Stood Still movie moment to have people believe in UFOs?
Well, Patrick, I don't argue with you. It has been muddied pretty thoroughly. And if you, mainstream scientists, big-time journalists, they won't touch it with a 10-foot pole, I don't think. Antonio, Alejandro, you guys want to comment on that at all? Can the waters be cleared?
I think they can, personally. I think that really, for instance, you have been a pioneer in that. You've been, you stick to a journalistic integrity, which we try to stick to, and I think that's the most important piece. And I personally think we filter the water that way. It's great that the Huffington Post is allowing Lee Spiegel, who's been a researcher for decades in this arena also, to write UFO stories. He helped me get my blog on the Huffington Post, so they're tackling it. He asked the History Channel guy, do you do this for ratings, or why are you doing this television show? And they said, no, we are really into the UFO subject. And the History Channel has, for the last few years, treated this subject very well. They just give the facts for the most part. They're giving, they were the first ones. I remember they did a World War II one with Foo Fighters, and I was shocked because the whole show went by and there were no debunkers. I mean, it was just information. So I think that, strict journalistic integrity, keeping it, just telling the story, I think that's going to help unmire the stuff, because we do get wrapped up in all of this information we've received from unnamed sources with information that we can't verify. And who knows, maybe some of that's real. But when you can't verify it, we could be chasing our tails. And the stuff that we can verify is incredible, and we can't lose that. We can't forget that stuff.
That's a great point. Thanks, Patrick, for that call. The stuff that scares me is the disinformation, is the stuff that's created by persons unknown that seemingly designed just to lead you down the wrong path and make you waste your time. Antonio, you've run into that.
Sure. Yeah, constantly. We have these kinds of stories. There was this this affair dealing with the Dulce base, the alleged Dulce base,
yeah,
with some fellow, supposedly Colonel X, who was sent to this guy Tony Sanchez in California. And as far as I can tell, that's a totally bogus story. And we've had, Michael Schratt, one of our editors, I'd be dealing with that story. And yes, we see this all the time, unfortunately. My rule of thumb is if you cannot verify the credentials of someone who claims that it was a colonel or intelligence officer or something like that, then it's better not to touch it. It doesn't mean that you have to go public with his name. I mean, that's understandable that people, often they don't want their name. But they should, if they're real, they should at least be able to give some evidence of their position, their military career or whatever, to the reporter. I'm sure, George, you dealt with this kind of stuff all the time when you were doing your investigation of Area 51. If the reporter sees that the credentials of the person are valid and then he can protect his identity. I mean, this is done by major newspapers, you know, the New York Times, the Washington Post, all the time, you know, on Deep Throat, right, on Watergate. I mean, this is common. But so long as the reporter can see some evidence, if it's totally anonymous, then yes, there is a wild chance that maybe it's true. But if you cannot verify it, then it's probably a waste of time.
East
well,
of
you
the
know,
Rockies.
And even if I was
going to
say, even if we can verify the person, such as Richard Doty, we've learned from this case where there was a guy, he did work for Air Force Intelligence, but there we can't confirm that anything he said was official. That's still in doubt and hasn't been proven. And we know that there are some factual problems with many of the things that he said. So even if they are who they are, say they are, there's still verification that needs to happen.
I'm going to hear from Rick Doty on that. I can tell you I'm going to hear about that. East of the Rockies, Don in Ohio is back. Hi, Don. Good morning.
Good morning, George. I think that about sometime this year, I don't know when, maybe next year, but I think that the president is going to give us a little October surprise. He will announce that, they've been at least, if not been in contact with them, at least acknowledge that they are UFOs.
How does that help him, Don? How do you think that helps the president?
Well, because he's they trapped the shuttle program. And personally, I believe that because they scrapped the shuttle program, there was they had something better already. And I talked to George here last month about seeing on TV about a boomerang shaped flying saucer over Boulder, Colorado, and the TV people. Got on it and they kept it right on the show. It was on CNN or MSNBC. I'm not sure which is the news channel, but there's been two or three of these that they've caught on TV all the time. And personally, I believe that they are man-made because this one, when it went up and it went behind a cloud, you could see a fuel contrail of some kind. It was not like what you normally see in a UFO.
Right.
I think it was man-made, personally. It might not have been, but anyway, I really do think that because they've scrapped that space program, they've got something a lot better. It's just kind of like the stealth program. You know, they wonder how long did it take them to announce that about the stealth bomber.
Right.
10 years.
Well, Antonio, I think Don makes a good point, is that it would seem likely that our military, if they were thinking clearly, would have something to replace the shuttle. We do know there is a classified version, a robotic plane, a space plane, right, that's flying around up there. Doesn't do the same thing the shuttle does.
Well, we should. I mean, if we don't, then, then the military-industrial complex has been wasting our money and our time, you know. I mean, they've had years to develop the stuff. They got all these black budgets, and they definitely should have something going in there. And yes, your caller is right. I mean, sometimes we know that the stealth was operating all through the 80s, and it wasn't even revealed until finally the invasion of Panama at the end of the 80s, 89, I think. So usually there's a lag of at least 10 years or more. But as far as the president coming up with an announcement, I've heard this rumor so many times that I'm afraid I'm a bit skeptical. I believed it only once, and that's when I was very fresh in the subject of ufology, and I read in the U.S. News and World Report, a very, totally mainstream publication, they had a famous article, short article, way, way back, that Jimmy Carter was going to make a big revelation. And I totally believed it, and I, because I was naive and I was just fresh, and I wrote, I remember, letters to NASA and the Air Force and all that, and of course it never happened. Yes, there was some release of FOIA documents under Carter, but that was different. That was because people were suing the government using the Freedom of Information Act. So I don't know. Unless the aliens, whoever they are, force the issue, and that's always a possibility, I don't see the government's doing it. I believe my theory is more like a death by a thousand cuts. What you do is you keep doing what we have seen already going on for 10, 15 years. A little release here, the MOD, the South American agencies, the Vatican has a conference on astrobiology, the Saudi Arabian thing. That was fascinating. It didn't get as much play as it should have. You know, that big investment symposium that they had a few months ago, and they did a whole session on UFOs. I think that's how it's going to happen. And you just keep opening little windows here and there, and until eventually, if there is an announcement, it will almost be anticlimactic. It's like everybody said, yeah, well, we knew that all along.
Alejandro, same sort of issue. Would you expect an October surprise? The problem I had with it is that I don't see how it benefits the president. I mean, this president in particular comes out and makes an announcement about flying saucers are real and aliens have landed or something. I don't see that helping him get reelected.
Yeah, I think the caller might have been saying, and I'm not sure that the president will talk about a new technology that we have, and possibly that technology back engineered from extraterrestrials or something. And of course, I talked about earlier in the 90s, you know, wherein the UK was talking a lot about the Aurora project and this top secret craft that they believe the United States government, a lot of people believe the United States government had. That might have flown and already been scrapped, because who knows what the heck they're doing. It's possible that they'll say, you know, we're taking something out of the black world and we're going to use it for NASA, but it doesn't necessarily mean it would have anything to do with UFOs and extraterrestrials, because you're right, just like John Schussler talked about, you know, you're opening up the Pandora's box, and it's not something that would help Obama. He doesn't seem to be interested at all in the subject. Podesta was, who helped him change over office, and Hillary had some involvement, but it doesn't seem like they were able to find anything out. They wanted to find out information, or at least were involved with projects to find out information, but were denied that access.
Fellas, I think we're just about out of time here. I want to thank you, Alejandro Rojas and Antonio Joneas. You're always interesting, always cover a lot of ground with you guys. I encourage people to go ahead and take a look at Open Minds Production. We have some links on the website. Hope you enjoyed yourself, fellas.
Greatly.
Yeah, it was a pleasure, George.
And we'll have you back again real soon. Thanks to Paul and Gina and to our webmaster, Tim. George Norrie's back Monday night. I'll be back next month. Good night, everyone.